talk today about a collaboration between the California Diabetes Program, which I work for, the California Smokers Helpline, which is the tobacco quit line for the state, and the tobacco control section in our state, and how we got together to address these issues. So what I'm going to talk about is just a brief description of the burden of tobacco and diabetes in California, how we brought these state programs together, which, as you can imagine, anytime you're bringing state-level bureaucracies together, there's going to be some challenges. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the strategies we used in our collaboration, the results and the lessons learned from our collaboration, and the potential for replicating a program like this. So actually in California, we are fortunate that our smoking prevalence rate is actually one of the lowest in the nation. It's about 13.3% of adults in California smoked as of 2006. But what we find is that even though there are increased risks for people with diabetes for smoking, the rate of smoking is very similar among people with diabetes and people who don't have diabetes. Among those who have diabetes, about 13.6% are smokers. And given that there are about 2 million people in California with diabetes, we're talking about 270,000 people with diabetes who also smoke. But what we do know about smoking is that it can really exacerbate and make diabetes worse. For one, it increases insulin resistance so that the body is less able to use the insulin in the body to convert the blood sugar, blood glucose, into energy. It causes worse diabetes control, so blood sugars can be rising, and it can also increase diabetes-related complications. Many of the complications from diabetes, things like cardiovascular disease, kidney disease, eye problems, retinopathy, or neuropathy, problems with the nerves, are things that can also occur with smoking, so you get sort of a synergistic effect, and both things are made worse. And there's even growing evidence that smoking may be an independent risk factor for the development of type 2 diabetes. So with that background in mind, we were fortunate that the CDC provided some funding to the California Smokers Helpline. They were trying to support a collaborative effort to enhance the quit line. And at that point, it wasn't really stated what the money was for. It was just some way to enhance the helpline. And the helpline determined that they really didn't need more staff. Fortunately, they're well-staffed. They're providing services in English, Spanish, Korean, Vietnamese, Cantonese, Mandarin. And they had a good staff. They didn't need too many more people, but they knew that what they wanted to do was do some more outreach to healthcare providers, who are an essential referral source for people calling into the helpline. And they also knew they wanted to collaborate with new partners in the state. So what they decided to do was to partner with the California Department of Public Health, specifically two programs, the California Diabetes Program, as well as the Tobacco Control Section, which is the state-level tobacco program. So the goals of the project were to increase the healthcare providers' awareness of the helpline, as well as their willingness to ask all patients with diabetes if they smoke, advise them to quit, and then refer them to the California Smokers Helpline. So this is what we call the ask, advise, refer intervention. And if you're familiar with the 5 A's for tobacco, this was an abbreviated version of that. And don't ask me to name the 5 A's because I always get them wrong, but it's, you know, ask, advise, assist, assess, and something else. The next level goal was to increase the use of the helpline by people with diabetes, and ultimately, you know, of course, hopefully what we're aiming for is to get people with diabetes to quit smoking. And the project period on this was from about October 04 to June 08. So let me just describe how the collaboration was structured. We did have a project lead, who's my co-author, from the California Diabetes Program, and we had a number of committees in which staff from each of the three programs were on these committees. We have a steering committee, which meets monthly by phone conference, and then we also had a couple of ad hoc committees, sort of things that came up as needed. We had an evaluation committee for a time at the middle of the project, and then we determined that we were saying a lot of the same things as in the steering committee, so we decided to just bring those together and try to save some time. And then we've also had some sub-project committees, so we have different aspects to our collaboration, so we oftentimes have committees for each of those. We had a budget of about $258,000 a year. And again, that's divided between the programs. What the helpline did with theirs was they decided to get an additional counseling staff, do a lot of administration and supporting their outreach department. It also supports it's an FTE or full-time equivalent within the diabetes program, but it's really spread across our staff. The tobacco control section at the State Department of Public Health does a lot of the administrative kind of contract grants management work. And then we've also had the opportunity to hire a number of consultants to do things like graphic design and evaluation and public relations that we didn't necessarily have internal capacities in any of our programs. Some of the strategies that we used were developing programs specifically for healthcare providers, as again, they were our target. And what we did there was develop some training presentations. We developed a toolkit for providers to use so that they could implement this Ask, Advise, Refer program in their offices. We developed a series of fact sheets as well that spoke specifically about the risks of combining diabetes and smoking, about increased risks of things like amputations and eye problems, kidney disease, those other complications I mentioned. And those fact sheets are all available in the languages of the helplines, or they're available in those five or six languages in addition to English. And then with the healthcare providers, we also work to do a lot of media outreach through healthcare provider newsletters and societies and things like that to try to get the message out to them in a variety of different ways. We also had as a subset of the healthcare providers is we worked specifically with diabetes educators. There's an American Association of Diabetes Educators, and they have local chapters. They happen to have 12 chapters in California. And so they have local chapters which are regionally based, where these educators get together and meet on, could be a monthly basis, it could be a quarterly basis. So what we tried to do was to contact the leadership of each of those chapters and invite someone to this project to begin working on what they call the Do You Card campaign. And in California, for the helpline, we have, it looks like a little credit card. They call it the gold card, and it's used to make referrals to the helpline. It has the helpline's number on it. And so they have developed this Do You Card as kind of a play on words with handing out the gold card, but then the AAR stands for the Ask, Advise, Refer Intervention. So we were all very happy when we came up with this name because we thought we were very clever. So the diabetes educators, we try to get them together periodically, and they've been developing their own sets of presentations that they're making to their chapters. We were able to get continuing education credit for that, which was a big incentive for the diabetes educators to attend, and we're now working on an online version of that to be able to make that more widely available, particularly to those diabetes educators in the state who may not be part of a chapter because our state is so huge. And we also tried to do a couple of referrals of, or a couple of pilots of a fax referral, which is where a healthcare provider could send a fax to the helpline if a patient was interested in counseling, and the helpline would proactively then call that patient, as opposed to the patient having to call into the helpline themselves. And that worked. Kind of, some providers really liked it. Other providers just, you know, it was just another thing to do, and it became too burdensome in their clinics. In addition to the products that we created, we noticed that there were some, there are certainly some other effects to the project. One thing that we were able to do was really to take those tobacco messages and incorporate them into our diabetes program. And not only to, when we see providers, not only encourage them to use this Ask, Advise, Refer intervention with people with diabetes, but certainly we're hoping that that's going to roll over into all of their other patients who might be smoking, to really try to heighten their awareness about the importance of smoking cessation among all their patients. Another thing that happened was that we added a question about diabetes to the helpline intake questionnaire. When somebody calls up, says they're interested in smoking cessation, the helpline goes through a series of questions that had asked them about, did they have any cardiovascular disease, were they under the care of a physician, did they have respiratory disease, and that type of thing. But when we started the project, there was no question that asked about diabetes. So as we were going through our evaluation, trying to figure out if people with diabetes, you know, were being successful in getting people to call in, we said, oh, wait a minute, you don't ask about diabetes yet, so that makes our evaluation sort of hard. And so they agreed to go ahead and add a question about diabetes to the intake questionnaire. And a lot of these effects are things that we would really see continuing on beyond the project period. There would be no reason for them to now take out that diabetes question. So it would continue to be something that they would have information about after the project ends. And another effect that we saw is that the healthcare providers really learned about what the helpline does for their patients. And again, that would extend beyond the people who have diabetes. Because in the trainings we do with healthcare providers, we really explain how the helpline is set up, the way that the counselors are going to answer the call, the types of services that are going to be offered, whether it's self-help materials that can be mailed out to the person, or that counseling that can happen over the phone. And we had noticed that healthcare providers oftentimes had misconceptions about what was available at the helpline. And they thought that people would just call up and get a recorded message that would say, hey, you know, quit smoking, and then that would be it. So they really learned that there was a lot more available. From the results, just looking at the first 6 months of the year, we saw that about 1,700 people with diabetes called the helpline and were provided self-help materials. And the vast majority of those also decided to go ahead with the smoking cessation counseling, because you have an option of just getting materials or going ahead with the counseling. And what we found is that people with diabetes are about 10% of all the callers to the helpline. And this is, in fact, higher than the state diabetes prevalence rate, which is about 7 or 8%. So, you know, we have a good sense that people with diabetes are getting the message that it is very important for them, in particular, to quit smoking. With the healthcare providers, what we found is that people with diabetes are more likely to be referred by their healthcare provider, whereas people without diabetes are more likely to be referred, say that they were referred by the media. And so that could be things like seeing a billboard or a PSA on television, hearing something on the radio. What we also know that we were able to do was to reach approximately 45,000 providers through the different presentations and conferences and events that we were attending. And through our public relations efforts, we reached about 500,000. We think it's about that in terms of media impressions for these 10 different publications in which we had some information published. And from our own website for the diabetes program, there have been about 4,000 downloads of the provider toolkit, which includes those fact sheets and information about Ask, Advise, Refer. With the diabetes educators, we did create a toolkit for them, and thus far we've given training presentations to 6 of the 12 chapters in the state, and we have a number more coming up. And we've also increased the referral rate to the helpline by diabetes educators. At the beginning of the project, we surveyed them and asked how many of them had referred people to the helpline, and there was about 44% that said they had referred people to the helpline. And when we did a mid-implementation survey, we found that that percent had risen to 53%. So we're very happy about that increase, and the diabetes educators have set a goal for themselves to increase that to 75%. So they had a very ambitious goal, and they're very enthusiastic about the project. We also have some good collaboration results, and we really feel that this is a sustainable effort. All of the partners who've gotten together are really supportive of the idea of integrating tobacco and diabetes, and we also see that moving over into thinking about tobacco and other chronic diseases. So I think having this partnership has helped the tobacco control section to figure out that they want to be able to work more closely not only with diabetes but with, you know, the cardiovascular and stroke prevention programs and other programs. And we also feel that the healthcare providers are really a sustainable referral source, and they can be much less costly than the media. Anytime the helpline tries to do an advertising campaign, it does cause a large spike in calls, but it's also very expensive to try to buy that media time. So if this is something that you can incorporate into a healthcare provider's routine practice, that's really going to be something that would carry forth to all of their patients. And we also found that we were able to incorporate both tobacco and diabetes into each of our programs, and that's something that we would carry forward in the future. In terms of the lessons learned from bringing all of these state programs together, we have found that it would have helped us to have a real clear project lead from the very beginning. There were some questions at times of, you know, who's the lead on this project, who has the authority to make decisions, and what kinds of responsibility do each of our partners have? So that would be something to work on from the beginning, as would be developing an evaluation at the beginning. There wasn't a required evaluation component from the beginning from this funding, and so, you know, it's really important to have that established at the beginning so that you know what your baselines are and you're really able to look at your progress and celebrate some of those successes. We've also found that the use of consultants can be really great because it can bring some needed skills and it can also bring efficiencies to the project without burdening staff who, you know, I'm not a media expert, so if I had to go and figure out how to get things placed in different newsletters or magazines, it would take me a whole heck of a lot longer than somebody who is skilled in that. And you could do it, you know, in a matter of hours as opposed to a matter of weeks. We also found that, of course, frequent communication is a must anytime you're bringing these different programs together that have traditionally had very different topics that they're concentrating on. Although we're all state programs, we're not all based in the capital of Sacramento, so we did a lot by email and web conferencing and phone calls and all that. But it can be really nice to bring people together and try to have face-to-face communication when it's possible. And if possible, you know, you can try to budget that in so you have those opportunities once or twice a year. It's also important to allow time for bureaucracies and particularly for budget processes as well as reporting processes. So one of the things we're finding is that, you know, when you have these three different programs and then there's three different reporting cycles or budget cycles, and it can get really confusing. And kind of knowing that up front, you can allow some time for it or have that conversation at the beginning, like, okay, what do you have to do? When do we need to have it to you so that things are real clear and you're kind of all operating with the same assumptions then? It's also important to consider carefully new opportunities that present themselves. And that's the great thing about a project like this, is that oftentimes people say, oh, you know, we could do tobacco and diabetes with this people and these people, and that's exciting, but you really have to look, is that going to fit into your work plan? Are you going to be able to evaluate it, and do you have somebody that has the time and the capabilities to undertake that in a way that's going to be successful? And then another thing that we want to do is make sure that we budget for dissemination. At the beginning, you know, we started the project, we weren't really thinking about disseminating, we were just trying to hit the ground running and get things going for ourselves. But what we found is that there has been a lot of interest in this project from other states, and we needed to be able to get the word out to them, whether it's by, you know, traveling to conferences or providing technical assistance to other states as well. So as we look towards the future and look at replication, we really think that this is a project that could be replicated for other chronic diseases. There's plenty of conditions that, you know, are important in the issue of tobacco, whether it's cardiovascular disease, asthma, cancer, also looking at doing some work with mental health, dental health, and substance abuse. All of these, you know, could have a good synergy with the tobacco program. And these are also some of the programs we're also beginning to have more discussions with as a diabetes program. And when you're looking at doing the replication, a couple of things you might want to be looking for is, are there designated healthcare providers that have a particular interest in that topic of, say, cardiovascular disease or asthma, who would be willing to hear those messages about tobacco? And then you also want to look at those conditions that have a fairly high prevalence, so that when you're asking somebody, like a healthcare provider, to change something in their practice, it's not something that they would be encountering very rarely, but something that they would maybe be seeing every day in the case of diabetes. If you're interested in more information or you'd like to see any of the toolkits or fact sheets, you can look them up on our Diabetes Information Resource Center, which is caldiabetes.org, and you can certainly feel free to contact me by email. Thank you very much.